it still works because that's where the government kind of relaxed the rules this year. So if you have just an agreement with your employer that you can work 2 days at home and perhaps you're in the office 3 days, that still can be considered work at home. Your credit won't be for a full 5 days at home because you weren't at home, but you'd prorate it for those 2 days. So, but you still need your employer to give you that T2200 form.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Strictly Money, your go-to source for all things personal finance. I'm Sejal Patel. All right. For those of you who have yet to file your taxes, you're in good hands because we are going to talk about tax tips. I want to make sure that you are maximizing your savings and minimizing your taxes. And I have the perfect guest today, Brian Quinlan. Some of you may know him, some of you may not, but he is very seasoned at helping Canadians navigate the complexities of the tax system. He's a CPA. He's also the contributing editor for Canadian Money Saver magazine. He has also co-authored guides like Tax Tips for Canadian Dummies, and he joins me now. Hi, Brian. Great to have you on Strictly Money.
Oh, thanks for the invitation. It's good to be here.
So the tax filing deadline is around the corner. And for procrastinators, and I have to admit, I'm one of them. I'm organized, okay. but I haven't filed yet. For those who are procrastinators, I think your advice is going to be very helpful. So I appreciate you coming on today. Before we, I guess, get into the nitty gritty, Brian, I want to get your take on the overall Canadian tax system and just, you know, what your thoughts are. And I'll tell you why. I've been having a lot of conversations with people in this space, you know, tax accountants just like you, and they've noticed a change with the CRA. One, you know, the system's been complicated, but they're noticing even a cultural change. I want to get your thoughts on that.
Okay, that's a good point. You can't always blame the CRA. A lot of the changes, they only administer the Tax Act. So the changes come from our government and the House of Commons and things like that. So, but you're right, there's been a lot that's been thrown at us the last, I would say, year, from the underused housing tax to the bare trusts things.
Which flopped in a way, didn't it? I mean, people...
It kind of dropped, and that's been very, very frustrating. Some of these aren't income tax, but it's very frustrating. You do work and then you bill for it, then it did need to be done and things like that. So you can't blame the CRA. It's the overall Department of Finance, or really it's our elected parliaments that pass the laws kind of thing. But even CRA seems to be tougher to deal with in terms of length. Right now, if you call, you'll get a message. It's going to be an hour and a half to speak to someone at CRA. They really want you to go online, which is great, but not everything is online. Like you can get your RSP limits and your tax installments and things like that. But if you have a question, it's or need a slip or something like that, you don't have a CRA My Account, it can be quite difficult to do. It's very, very frustrating that way.
Do you think that it should be simplified? I mean, it just feels like every year there's something else new for someone to think about. And yeah, and I say that, Brian, because look, the average Canadian is not financially literate. We have, you know, most people have not been taught to how to file their taxes.
Yeah, it seems to get a bit more complicated every year. And it's not so much the tax. It's just so many government programs funnel through your tax returns. So whether you get an HST credit or a GST credit, nothing to do with income tax per se, but it's based on your income. So you need a return to figure out what that is. Or if you get a provincial rent credit or things like that, or the government wants you to save for a first home. So there's the new thing this year is a first home savings account. So you have to file a tax return, another form as part of that tax return, another line on your tax return. So all the government programs, some that we like because they get us tax deductions or get us money back, all take more time to do. But you're right, everything's got a funnel through the system. We only have one filing for all of us in Canada. We don't file this part for HST and this part for tax and this part for rent. It all comes together.
Do you think other countries have it more streamlined? And I'll tell you, like I lived in Singapore, in Hong Kong. I could do my taxes in about under a minute. It was so simplified.
No, and some of the countries like you name, including the UK, they often do the tax return for you. They get the slips that you get. We get our T4 from work. We get our T5 from our bank account interest and things like that. So the government has those things. So they do have the ability to do your tax return. Obviously, they can't do it if you're self-employed or have certain expenses, but the government is moving towards that way where for the easiest returns, they should be able to do it for you because they do have all the information.
Okay, well, we'll see if that happens. Okay, well, let's go back to filing, because it is around the corner. April 30th is the deadline. Of course, that falls on a Sunday. So you have until, I guess, May 1st to officially file. Obviously, this is for personal taxes. Can you remind us why it's important to, one, file your taxes, but also file on time?
Definitely. The answer to filing on time, if you are a regular person, your return is due April 30th. If you're self-employed or your spouse is self-employed, it's due June 15th. So that's just the due date for your return. But the due date for your money is, for all of us, April 30th. So we don't want to miss that deadline kind of thing of paying your money. Interest right now is at 10%, probably double what it was a year ago. Like everywhere else, CRA's interest is very, very high. So you don't want to be getting hit with a 10% interest charge as of May 1st kind of thing. So pay on time. And if you don't have your return done, do your best guess or make an installment just before April 30th. So when you do file your return, there's nothing owing. So there won't be a penalty. So you have interest. And if you do late file, there's a 5% penalty off the top of any amount that is due. So one, it's important to make your money payment, but also to file on time, just to avoid penalties and interest.
Yeah. And like you said, you can always guess.
You can always guess. And we'll meet some people near the last week of April. We won't have time to get it completed. We'll say, well, we think it's going to be $10,000. So make an online payment for $10,000. Hopefully we're in the ballpark of being correct.
But Brian, you know, I know a lot of people say, I'm pretty sure I don't owe money. I've done a rough calculation. They still should file their taxes, right? Because they miss out on, they could miss out on important credits.
Well, two things for that. Definitely you want to make sure you always file each year, because as we said, a lot of government programs are based on your tax return, based on your income level. If you don't file, you won't get your HST credit or your GST credit, because the government doesn't know what your overall income is. Are you low income? Are you high income? But also people always say, always get a refund, get a refund. And then when we do their tax in July, we go, no, you don't have a refund. You forgot this slip. So you suddenly do owe money as of April 30th. So the interest and penalties will kick in. So if in default, file on time.
Okay. So Brian, let's talk about what's new for the, I guess it is the 2023 tax filing year. What should Canadians be aware of? I will mention one. I know that the tax brackets are up.
Yes. Okay. The tax brackets are higher because we had a lot of inflation last year. So they moved the brackets up with inflation. So that's good news. So if you have exactly the same income this year as you did in 2022, you will pay less tax. That's the good news about all that. The last couple of federal budgets we've had have been housing, and then more housing. So that's where all the credits have come in. And of course, 2023 was the first year for the first home savings account. So many people thinking of buying a house set up that account. They could have put $8,000 into it. As we said at the top of the show, that's now another schedule on your tax return to complete, saying you have a first home savings account, and take a deduction right under the RSP deduction line on your jacket. So that's the big thing that saves people a lot of money, and also works towards being able to save for a house. A very, very, very powerful tax tool. The government wants to have you have a home or something like that. So they are helping you with this kind of thing. So that was the biggest change and the biggest taxpayer-friendly change as well this year in terms of housing.
And Brian, can you remind listeners or viewers about the first home savings account? Do they have to take the deduction this year, or can they wait? Because I know with RSP, you can take it later.
You're right. It's kind of modeled on the RSP rules. So if you have a very low income this year or no income in 2023, you don't need an $8,000 deduction. So why not? You can save it for next year or the year after when your income might be higher or you're in a different higher marginal tax bracket. Definitely you can save that deduction to the best year you can use it. So if you know if your income is going to go up, definitely save that deduction for a future year. Good point.
Very, very smart tax planning. Now I understand that there's also a multi-generational type tax credit.
This is brand new for 2023. And again, more housing. The government wants people to have a place to live. So they want you to invite your parents or your grandparents to live with you, kind of thing. So if you incur renovation costs to make an apartment in your basement that has a separate entrance, a kitchen, and a bathroom for your parents or grandparents to leave, multi-generation, then you'll get a tax credit up to $7,500 based on $50,000 of expenses. So again, that's new. And again, back to our theme of housing in the last couple of federal budgets.
Yeah. Let's talk about, there's the Canadian Dental Care Plan as well from a previous budget. And that's also kicked in. Can you explain that one?
It's kicked in. Again, the Liberal government had to move. That was part of the NDP getting together with the NDP not to throw the Liberals out. So that began last year. And for low-income people, they can get some of their dental costs covered for their children. That probably is expanding to seniors and more people. Again, it'll be based on income. So again, another reason to file a return.
Okay.
So it's coming in, and we have things coming on PharmaCare coming in the coming years.
Okay. So that's good to know too. Where can people find more information? I mean, do you recommend it's probably going to the Canada Revenue Agency site? I can find it complicated, but you know, sometimes I'm guessing that is the best place to go.
That's always my go-to, the CRA website for things like that. And it can be a bit overwhelming, but it is discussed there very, very clear. And if you want more details, you can jump to the Department of Finance website and see what the rationale was before for that change kind of thing. Because again, I said CRA only administers what the Department of Finance tells them to administer. But also there's a lots on other things are there's lots of law firms and accounting firms that publish newsletters, and they're all over the internet, and they're all very, very good. So it's kind of a less technical, maybe shorter idea. What's the purpose of it? How to do it? Who it applies to? Who it doesn't? So the internet, maybe go to CRA first and then start looking at newsletters of accounting firms and law firms that have posted.
Yeah. I always say, you know, it's a good idea to start there. If you still have questions, then I suppose you could call the CRA and have them explain it to you. Brian, we're going to take a quick commercial break and hear from our sponsors, BMO ETFs. We'll be right back.
Are you looking to enhance the level of cash flow from your investments? BMO ETFs has you covered with their covered call ETFs. These ETFs generate cash flow from two sources, the dividend yield from the underlying securities and the premium generated from selling the call options. BMO covered call ETFs strike a balance between generating cash flow and participating in the growth of rising markets with your experienced portfolio management team and effective strategy with over 10 years of history. BMO ETFs is the largest covered call ETF provider in Canada, covering 13 covered call ETFs across a range of strategies across regions, countries, and sectors. Visit BMOETFs.com to learn more. Please read the ETF facts or prospectus of the BMO ETFs before investing.
Welcome back to Strictly Money. I'm here with Brian Quinlan. Brian, let's talk about maybe some of the overlooked strategies for Canadians. And it, you know, I find that sometimes Canadians do overlook certain just really simple strategies where they can save more. So maybe we can talk about a few of those. One that comes to mind is income splitting.
Yes. Okay. And that's a very popular one. One that I would always throw out there. People say, I'm a salaried employee. What can you do to save me tax? And there probably isn't a lot of things I can do there. But if they have, you get your tax taken off every 2 weeks from your paycheck kind of thing. But if you have money to invest, I'd rather perhaps if there's two spouses, I'd rather have the spouse with the higher income not do the investing and the spouse with the lower income do the investing. So first of all, if the higher income spouse can buy all the groceries, pay all the mortgage payments, pay the car loan off and things like that, and we can invest the lower spouse's hand money, then that would be taxed in a lower income spouse's hand. So therefore, your overall household income is the same, but the overall tax bill is lower. So your take-home, your leave-home pay is higher. So this in terms of who spends the groceries, the mortgage payments, the car payments, and who does the investing. I'd rather want the lower spouse to do the investing kind of thing.
So this is really smart strategy. Now, I assume that's for non-registered accounts, right? Because if you're
non-registered accounts. Yes. Yeah, that's right. We want somewhere tax kind of thing. We just always want someone to maximize their RRSP deduction. That's probably the best savings tool we have in our tax system there is our RRSP kind of thing. Now we have the first home savings account, but definitely if we can spread the investing around the family members, both say two spouses and their children. So the overall household income, gross income is the same, but the take home or the leave home money is increased because we're using people's different tax brackets, lower tax brackets than the high income spouse.
And then when it comes to RSP, it's almost like the reverse, isn't it? You want, you know, the higher income spouse to invest in the RSP. Spousal RSP is also very important.
Exactly. It's good you mentioned spousal RSP. It's kind of getting not as mentioned as it used to be because of pension splitting. listening, people say, I don't need a spousal RRSP anymore. But the spousal RRSP offers a bit of more flexibility. So I still want, if there's a high income spouse, perhaps a pension plan at work, I want that still spouse to maximize his RRSP deduction, but contribute to a spousal RRSP. So this to give us the flexibility come when both spouses retire and how I split the income out. So don't forget about spousal RRSPs, even though we do have pension splitting now. Good point.
What about medical expenses? Because I think this is the part that I think a lot of people miss. They're like, you know, yeah, I'll deduct medical expenses, but you can actually combine this with your partner.
Definitely. You want to maximize the claim. So I always want people for medical expenses to combine them because you have to exceed, like, I think it's about $2,600 this year to get any credit at all. So if you have a high income kind of thing. So you want to combine the medical expenses and usually claim them on the lower income spouses because the credit will be that much higher. So combining your medical with your spouse and claiming them on the lower income spouse's tax return will get you more bang for your buck in terms of tax savings.
And Brian, remind me, can you roll that forward, or you have to actually deduct those medical expenses in that year?
Yeah, it's a good question. You have some flexibility in choosing your tax year for medical expenses. So your medical doesn't have to be a December 31st tax year. It can be any day in the year ending. So you can maximize your expenses depending on when they were incurred. Say you had an expense in December 2022, a very large one, and then another one in January 2023. Well, if you haven't used, they may not have been able to use separately in separate calendar years, but if you can combine those, you have a more flexibility in choosing your medical expense tax year and bumping up that credit. Good point.
Okay. Now, do charitable donations work similarly?
They do, except you can combine spouses, and I always want them to be combined because the first $200 gets a lower credit than the rest. So I don't want to have two low credits for husband and wife at $200. I want to maximize how much can be at the very high tax credit. So combining the charitable donations of both spouses is pretty common to do.
Brian, I know a lot of people work from home still. You know, I mean, there were a lot of tax benefits from my understanding during the pandemic. What's changed that people should be aware of?
Okay, we kind of got used to that $400, that $500 a year deduction everyone was really entitled to because we were all at home. Well, those are all gone. Okay.
So all of it's gone.
All of it's gone. Okay. So there's no $500 deduction that we were entitled to a couple of years ago for working at home because we had to because of COVID and all the offices were closed. If you're still working from home, and many people are, as you said, you can still claim home office, but you have to go through more of the detailed method. The $500 was a simplified method at $2 a day. That's how it worked out. Now, the more complicated method is totaling up your utilities, your hydro, your gas, your water, how much of a space you use in your house was your office kind of thing. You have to calculate that number. Plus, you have to have your employer give you a tax form T2200, which basically says you as my employee have to incur employment expenses. So getting the form from your employer is the first step.
So then, Brian, what happens where, you know, someone chooses to work from home? Because you see flexibility now, you know, employers are encouraging employees to come to the office, but employees are saying, you know what, this is kind of difficult. I'll come 2 days a week. The rest of the time I'll work from home. So they're actually choosing to work from home, the employee. Does this still count?
It still works because that's where the government kind of relaxed the rules this year. So if you have just an agreement with your employer that you can work 2 days at home and perhaps you're in the office 3 days, that still can be considered work at home. Your credit won't be for a full 5 days at home because you weren't at home, but you'd prorate it for those 2 days. So, but you still need your employer to give you that T2200 form.
Okay. Brian, what are some of the common mistakes that you see Canadian taxpayers make?
Okay. The biggest one, I guess, is perhaps procrastination. Not so much in terms of doing the return, but you can often have meetings or other shows like this. There's many articles in the newspapers these days on what you can do to save your tax. There's not a lot we can offer for 2023, but there's a lot we can offer for 2024 and 25. So it's really getting these, when you're frustrated with writing a tax check, say at the end of April 30th, what can you do to avoid the same thing a year from now kind of thing. So it's putting plans in place. You mentioned income splitting. Maybe it is time you want to start saving for a home. So the first time home savings account may be attractive. Income splitting may be attractive. So starting to put these plans in place, don't be afraid of the technicality of how these things work. They will save you money going forward in terms of tax and estate planning. So it's not so much the day-to-day not doing your tax return. It's not doing the tax planning tips that are all kind of tried, tested, and true and not aggressive tax planning tips that we've discussed in the last 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah. So you do really want to start ahead of time, at least a few months, if not more.
You want to get something in place. So can this time next year, your family's tax bill, don't be selfish and bring your family into it, is lower than this year's tax bill.
Yeah. Speaking of 2024, for this year, what are you looking at that people should be thinking about?
Okay, we have a budget coming up next week, I think on the 16th, but it's an interesting budget because we've already heard a lot about it. I think the last 2 weeks, Justin Trudeau has been all over Canada. We know there's going to be school breakfast programs. We know there's going to be more money going towards apartment and rental housing. We know the carbon tax is not going to be reduced with this government kind of thing. There's pharmacare is coming. So all these things that I would have thought would have been in budget, they're kind of announcing now. So the budget may not have a lot of surprises in it because we just got things going on, but it's definitely going to be focused more on inflation is high, interest rate is high. What can you do? What can the government do to make your cost of living lower? Would be my guess where it's going to be, kind of thing. So no tax increases, but what can the government do without increasing its deficit too much, because interest rate is high on them as well, to make your cost of living go down? That's what I'm hoping for, looking for.
So do you expect a lot more tax credits to come up?
There could be I think pharmacare will bring in some credits for younger people, or just going to the drugstore, there'll be more, like dental plan, it'll be free up to a certain limit for certain things. The government's already coming. It's going to help people with diabetes and their medication. So a lot of that will be low cost or free now. So I think that's going to be more credit, where you're going to see more tax savings, or more savings, not so much tax savings, but just in your everyday living expenses for drugs and medication.
Yeah. I guess the devil's always in the details, right? We'll have to see how it actually plans out. And of course, it has to get approved. Do you see any issues around that?
No, I think all our budgets pass, unless the government falls. The budget will probably be passed. If not they have to pass it really before the end of the year. So sometimes it's not passed before the summer, but that would be when the government comes back in September. That's when the budget details are passed, because we need the things in place before the end of 2024. So the tax forms can be amended and changed to allow the new tax rates or tax credits or things like that. So the government's got a certain, they've got to pass the budget probably in the fall at the latest.
Brian, how does, you just made me think of something. How does all this work? I mean, so when they come up with these announcements, do they typically engage the tax community to test it first, or do they come up with these announcements and then they go to the tax community for input?
That's a good question. I think there's something called a white paper sometimes that is, it's more on a huge tax change. Like we brought in negative income splitting and different taxes back in the summer of 2017. It was a huge, huge deal. So there was more there wasn't going to be phased in right away. There was going to be a two-year phase in. So there is time, what they call government consultation, where they will reach out to bodies, the law societies, the CPAs Canada, to get the feedback on what these changes are going to be. So the government does reach out for changes that aren't going to happen right away. It's not some changes can happen, it's announced today, it could be law tomorrow, or it could be effective tomorrow. But the major changes do go out to consultation.
I think what's going to be an interesting one, and I know you've noted it, and it's been on the news as of the last week, is the artificial intelligence announcement. What are your thoughts on that one?
Well, I think that we have two things. We want to be a leader. I think Canada wants to be a leader in the tech side of things like that. That's one thing. But also the security we need. What is really true? So that's where it's good the government is spending money on things that are very current and very popular. If Canada can be a leader in technology, all that much better. Perhaps nothing to do with income tax, but that's where for training and getting people educated, that is great. But we all have to be very careful. We've all been fooled, or we know we're people by fooled by fake videos or fake emails or lots of stuff across every day now we see.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary sometimes, you know, the things that I see. It's funny because, you know, we had the eclipse, the total eclipse yesterday. And I was looking online and I saw these photos. And I was like, oh, those are phenomenal. And then when you look closely, you realize it's artificial intelligence. They're not really real, but that's just one case. But I love the fact that, you know, if it does turn out that we could be a leader in this space, but time will tell. Brian, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for coming on for your tax tips. Now, before I let you go, I always ask my guests three rapid fire questions. It's just, for me, it's a way to humanize finance, as I like to say. So you're ready to play?
Yeah, ready to play. Okay.
Okay. What is the best financial advice you've ever received?
I think it's whether I received it or thought of it, it's pay yourself first. So every month, something disappears from your bank account and goes somewhere else into an RSP or something. So I think David Chilton of Wealthy Barber fame said, pay yourself first. So you're not budgeting at the end of the month for that last $100. Every paycheck, $50 comes off and goes into an RSP. So you're buying $50 RSP a month. So at the end of the year, you've got a bit of an RSP. At the end of a career, you've got a bigger RSP. So that's been, I think, the best thing is always keep paying yourself.
It's such a great strategy, right? I always say, pay yourself first for your most important goals before you pay everyone else for theirs. and it's, you know, it's interesting because you don't actually miss the money that you don't see.
You don't miss it. It just disappears and you don't notice it. Yep.
Okay. So what is the worst financial advice?
I think of anything and more on the investment side is to avoid anyone that says the hot stock tip. Because they're never hot stock tips kind of thing. So I've been able to avoid those or watch hot stock tips and they haven't gone as well as they were supposed to go. But that's it. So again, that's more of an investment theme versus a tax or a savings theme is more diversified. You want a diversified investment pool portfolio.
Yeah, the hot tends to, there's a word that's missing from the hot is that it's risky, usually.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. Yes, that's a good point. Okay.
Isn't it?
Or you've missed the boat, one of that. Okay,
yeah,
yes, okay.
Is, yeah. You know, I always know when, and like you, you know, you've done television interviews. I've always obviously been a business correspondent, but, you know, sometimes when a news channel reaches out to me and said, my grandma is really interested in this. That's when I know to stay away. Because when crypto was a craze, Brian, I was always getting these calls. Like, do you want to talk about it? I'm like, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Last question. If you could enact one tax change that you think would help Canadians with their financial well-being, what would it be?
I think it would be probably to make the tax act, as we started off, a bit less intimidating. So it kind of makes sense to people what they're doing. And a lot of tax changes do make sense. You don't know the theory behind them, but they do. But it'd be less intimidating for people because as we started at the beginning of the show, it is getting more complicated each year as we get new credits or new issues being taxed. It seems like a lot's being thrown at us in the last 10 years very, very quickly and perhaps not that well thought out. So I think at some point in time, we do need a huge tax reform to break it down and make it less intimidating, more understandable, more transparent.
Wouldn't that be nice if it was less onerous? And, you know, I think my gut check is if a reasonable person can do it themselves, then we're on to something.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much, Brian.
You're very welcome.
Brian Quinlan. Thank you. Well, that wraps up this edition of Strictly Money. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and share it. Leave a comment, leave a review. I would love to hear from you. Until next time, stay well, stay wise, and stay wealthy.